Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Trout stocking is underway. Started this past week. I saw a few of those PeaQuest chariots on the roll in my travels up and down the state this past week. Now, just a reminder, any trout stocked water is off limits to fishing until April 8th at 8 a.m. There are a couple of exceptions in the Rack and Fin Radio listening area. Lake Shenandoah, up there in Lakewood, and Prosper Town Lake, both in Ocean County, right off 537 there. Ooh, great crappie and pickerel and bass in Shenandoah. Whoa. But again, if you do catch any trout, they have to be immediately released. We have a couple of bass tournaments coming up April 1st, Saturday at Mirror Lake. It's going to be a kayak tournament sponsored by the South Jersey Kayak Bassmasters from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And also that day on Union Lake from 7 to 3 is the Cumberland County Bassmasters. They're hosting an open buddy tournament as well. Go to South Jersey Bass Club Association, sjbca.org, for more information on that. Just a reminder, too, try to get it done now in the spring. Register for your hunter safety course. You know, someone that wants to get their archery license, their firearms license, hunting license. Get to it now. njfishandwildlife.com. They'll have a schedule on there. And also, starting 10 a.m. Monday, leftover and unclaimed turkey permits will be for sale. Over the counter, go to your license issuing agent. Some of the zones, I would say, like turkey hunting area, what, 14, 16, sold out, I would think. Now you got the five periods, but I don't know, it's going to be a tough go. But there are plenty of permits out there. Turkey numbers look solid. Looks like we're going to have a good spring, barring any bad weather happening. Back to the trout stocking, though, too. Again, the annual bonus brood stock program as part of Division of Fish and Wildlife. Can I say division? I don't even know I can say it anymore. DEP's Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Freshwater Fisheries. They picked 10 lakes on a rotating basis, north, central, and south, and included in their preseason stocking are anywhere from 30 or 50 bonus broodstock, 2.5 to 3.5 year old rainbows. People, some of these fish, 6-7 pounds. I've seen them. They're monsters, absolute monsters. In Rack and Fin Radio area, Giampetro Park Lake in Cumberland County. That's 11 acres. It's going to receive 440 trout, and in that number will be 50. Check it out, 50 of these bruisers. Heritage Park Pond there. Shout out to Captain Dave Scholl, Obsequin Bay Sports Center. And they're in Obsequin, right behind the municipal building we call it the Obsequin Pit. 6 acres, going to get 440 trout with 30 of the big breeders. And Ponder Lodge, Pondlander, Villison, and Cape May. I'll never forget former Bureau Chief Lisa Barno down there stocking in November. Jimmy Hardaby, who's now lands management up north, saying, Tom P., I didn't think there was water like this in South Jersey. Ponder Lodge, a beautiful 7-acre venue. That's going to get 490 trout, and 30 of those will be the big rainbow bombers, the bow bombers, as we call them. And wrapping up before I get to our first guest, which we're going to be talking TOG, April Toggin with Frankie Mahalik. The Burlington County chapter of Ducks and Limbs is going to hold a hunting and fishing swap meet April 8th. Opening day of trout from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Range 14. Free admission, $20 if you want a table to sell stuff. And give Wayne a call, 609-949-1847 or wayneenjducks@gmail.com. Wow, some of these email addresses. But coming up, Frank Mahalik, outdoor writer extraordinaire, seminar speaker. Boy, he really he lights him up at the AC Boat Show for sure. Writing articles for years and years. Inshore specialists. We're talking April TOG tactics. 1 month season starting April 1st. Grab that cup, grab that rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Time to kick some TOG ass. Be right back.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
You've probably been playing with all the new AI products that create text and pictures and music. But what practical use is all of this? How does it help you or your business? Insurance giant Aflac is already using AI automation for a bulk of its business.
So we now have it where we've got automations that can help us process claims faster at a higher quality, which means the customer gets their money faster.
Keith Farley is Innovation Director at Aflac. New studies show more and more businesses using AI to handle customer matters in a realistic and timely fashion. But Farley warns sometimes the robot is not appropriate to handle exasperated or distraught clients. In such cases, the customer should be able to press one to talk to a real person.
There's a time when people just want to deal with an authentic human experience. And so we just need to be careful as companies to make sure that we don't replace that human experience.
With Fox on Tech, I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
As I said earlier, fishing is breaking out all over. April 1st, April Fool's Day, next Saturday, tog season. We call the April tog season. Goes from the first day to the last day. Kind of an iffy bite. If you know what you're doing, where to go, you're going to catch these tog again. Four fish limit at a 15-inch minimum. But it can be a tough time of year. Or, as I just said, if you know where to go and what to use, how to do it, you're going to score some nice fish. Very special guest on the Rack and Fin line with us right now is outdoor writer extraordinaire Frank Mihalik, an inshore fishing specialist. He is 5 years with Century Rods. He's a designer and pro staff member. 30 years fishing for tog, drum, fluke, stripers, you name it. He's done it. And also a seminar speaker. He catches seminars at the AC Boat Show. Frank, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin. A week to go. You're locked, cocked, and ready for the tog. Uh-huh.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here this morning with you. Yeah, I'm ready. My rods are all ready to go. My charters are all set. I'm ready to go.
Frank, this has always been, to me anyway, not that I'm any a blackfish angler of any repute, but April always seems to be a tough bite for me, not that I go that much. And the few times, it's sketchy, scratchy, iffy. Frank, avails with some of your tactics here on the April tog bite.
Tom, normally April comes in really tough. Usually we have water temps in the upper 30s. The fish are real lethargic. This year, we're coming off a bit of a weather anomaly where we never really had any winter this year. You know, last year we had El Nino. This year we had La Nina. We had no winter in the Northeast. Water temps off Cape May are 43 and 45 right now.
Oh.
I guarantee you those fish are chewing right now. They're ready to go.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that high. Because we caught tog. We always had a New Year's Day trip on the Carolyn Ann 3. 41, 42 degrees. A tough bite, but we still picked off a few keepers. So at the temps you just said, man, this is going to be a gangbuster month, no?
Yes. Usually in April, I usually don't fish the first week of April because it's so beat up. But this year, I'm all ready to go. And I think, you know, one of the things you need to do, Tom, when you go out there to try to get these fish to kind of wake up and get them interested, is first thing is we usually don't rush to get out there. You know, before the sun comes up, those fish are just not really going to eat too good. We usually let the sun get up a little bit and get them going. And then we start fishing these baits and we try to be really patient. Try not to swing on everything so that we're not attracting the dog sharks. And trying to stay on a spot maybe for like 45 minutes or an hour to see if we can get these fish going. That once these fish do come out of the wreck and they do start to chew a little bit, a lot of times that excitement builds throughout that wreck community and the other fish are curious. They'll come over, they'll start seeing what's happening, and before you know it, you got a little bit of a bite going on under your boat.
There you go, Frank. A little non sequitur here, but speaking of the spiny doggies, I spoke to Willie Egerter III on the Dauntless the other day. He says, you know, Tom, for April 1st, we're going to be able to get a few fishes, but right now it's hardly any ling around, some cod, some pollock, no white hake. He says, but those GD dogfish, they're freaking ever. They've taken over the wrecks.
Absolutely. And they actually, I mean, they not only, you know, harass the blackfish, but they harass striped bass as well. I mean, when we're pulling up a 40-inch striped bass and there's three doggies nipping at its tail, you can imagine what they do to the blackfish. And what they do is when they encompass the wreck, you know, the blackfish actually live in the wreck. So they actually get absorbed into the wreck for hiding and protection, and they won't come out if those doggies are around like crazy. One of the things we try to do to avoid the dogfish is we avoid bright, shiny colored jigs. Like, we don't want We don't want anything like the glow jigs. We don't want glow beads on our hooks. That will not attract them so much. And another thing that attracts them too, Tom, I hate to say this, is, but when you're black fishing, when you feel a peck, 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 I will not swing on those little pecks until that fish is actually walking the sinker away from me. And then I'll swing. Because if you drop your hook to the bottom and you pull, if you, you know, swing and a miss, you're lifting your sinker a couple feet off the bottom.
Right.
The dogfish see it. They come over. And the next bite you get is a dogfish.
And they are on you. Joining us on the Rack and Fin line this morning is Frank Mihalik, Century Rod designer and pro staffer, also a pro staffer with Tsunami. I'll tell you, Mihalik, those Tsunami reels, man, they're doing some damage out there.
I love that company. The best thing I love working with them is they're so responsive that if I do find something that's not perfect on the reel and I bring it to their attention and I, you know, send them a real nice email and a diagram, they quickly respond and make corrections that make their products perfect. And I think that is awesome. They're just such a great group over there. They really care about what they put out.
I know. And Frank, I explained it before. I've known some of the people up there for decades. They're hardcore anglers. They're not pickleball players or golfers. When they're free time, they're fishing. But, Frank, back to the talk. Can we clear something up right now, Mihalik? Because I don't know what to think. You always hear, I always heard that, in the early spring, the togs' teeth hurt, their gums hurt, blah, 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 blah. It's a sore. Is that BS or is that true? What have you found in all your, you've been togging for decades. What do you find?
In the spring, I do like to use softer baits. When these fish are not aggressively jumping on the bait, what I'll usually do is, in the springtime, I really like to fish a jig, unless I'm fishing a very tall piece of structure. If I'm fishing a wreck that's like 15, 20 feet off the bottom, I'm probably going to be fishing a rig just so I can get that fish away from the structure without him owning me and getting me back into the wreck. But if I'm fishing the down current side of the boat, if I'm being able to get my jig away from the wreck where the current is not constantly drawing it back in, I love to fish a jig in the springtime. And what I'll normally do is I'll take a nice strip of clam, I'll hook one end of the clam on the hook, and then I'll take a half of a green crab with no legs and no shell. I'll put that on the hook so that the crab is laying with the clam right on top of it. And a lot of times too, I'll drop a slider hook on my leader.
Ooh.
I'll have my leader, I'll drop a slider hook on, and then I'll tie the jig on. So I have two baited hooks down there and the tog will come over and they'll start chomping on the clam. And then when they get this nice piece of crab under it, they'll keep on chewing. But to keep the bait small, give them something that's easy to eat. When the fish are not really active, to give them a nice, small, trimmed bait will really increase your bites and, you know, your hookup ratio.
So, Frank, clam and crab, your go-tos?
Yep.
Any particular, salted clam. It was here, the fish don't bite salted clam. We caught fish on salted clam. Drum only want fresh clam. We caught them on salted clam. Does it make a difference?
No, I prefer fresh clam just because it has such a nice, sweet, clean smell. You know, it just smells like the sea. But also, cooked frozen shrimp. These fish will.
Bingo.
These fish when they get onto the soft bait, and I don't mean raw shrimp. I mean cooked frozen shrimp, like you're ready to dip it in your cocktail sauce. Yup. Put it on your hook and put a half a crab on there and let at it.
Frank, in all your years togging, any credence to the scented baits? Or applying scent to a bait?
I always use fresh bait, so adding extra scent really has never been an issue to me.
Mm-hmm.
I never use frozen bait. I never use artificial bait. It's just not right for the application. And the way we have the fish for these tog, I mean, I know a couple guys that caught them on flies and this and that, but we're full combat togging, man. You know what I mean? We are full combat togging.
We're speaking with Frank Mihalik, Century Rods designer and pro staffer, also a pro staffer with Tsunami Outdoor Rod. Writer, fishing writer extraordinaire, insurance species specialist. Let's see, tog, fluke, drum, stripers. I mean, Mog, you catch them all. And listen, his seminars are second. And he had one at the AC Boat Show. We're going to do a whole show on this. Or I should say a whole show, part of the show. Upcoming when the drum run really gets going. Frank, what was that? What was that seminar you did? Go ahead.
Well, remember about 10 years ago when you never heard about catching blackfish on a jig?
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody ever heard about catching black drum on a jig either, but I've been doing it for the last couple of years. And one of the things I do with Century and with Tsunami is, you know, testing tackle doesn't mean you just use it and tell somebody how great it is. I want to go out there and I want to catch black drum on tackle that's meant for fluke. I want to catch cow nose raised and big sand sharks when they come in the back on 2,000 size reels. I really want to put this tackle to the test, and this is a great way to do it. But these black drum, a lot of times I'll fish for them with a jig, plain old blackfish jig, and man, I'll tell you what, it changes that. It really puts your skill to the test. When you're catching a 65-pound fish on 20-pound line on a spinning reel, I'll tell you what, you learn the difference between low pressure and side pressure and how to try to handle that fish next to the boat, man. It's a whole new thing, but it sure is a hoot.
Frank Mahalik, tackle user, tackle abuser. Hey, Frank, we're up against a break. People, grab that cup, grab that rail. We'll be right back. We're talking April Tog with Frank Mahalik, Rack and Fin Radio.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go, the gap below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We're going to March 25th and 26th. Man, last weekend of the Ides month. Weather's been, I don't know, man. To me, March was a lion pretty much the entire month. Hey, we have Frank Mahalik on board. We're talking April togging. So, Frank, it's, again, you said with the weather, the water temperatures, even though we've had some, you know, it's been colder in the mornings, the ocean temperatures are up there more so than they normally are in standard April early season. So we have the baits, we have the airs. What type of wrecks specifically or cover are you targeting now for these blackfish? April, what do you got?
We're going to spend a lot of time in the reef sites because blackfish are kind of funny. You know, I'm always targeting a trophy blackfish. I'm always looking for that double-digit blackfish. And the way you really find them is by sometimes you get out on a wreck all by yourself. You might be 30 miles offshore. The trouble with that is you go to that one wreck 30 miles offshore. You're in 125 foot of water. You drop down, you catch two or three big fish and two or three small fish, and then the wreck's all picked off for the day. So you didn't only pick it for the day, but if you were able to release those fish, at least they can go back down there and survive. If for some reason the fish blow up on the way up, and if they're not going to make it and you keep them, then that's one less fish on that wreck. So it's not very sustainable. The reef sites are very sustainable, and the fish will move throughout the structure in the reef sites. They'll move from wrecks to rock piles, almost like how we walk around our block. You know, we go for a walk after dinner. These fish move around a little bit. They'll sometimes move from one reef site to the other, because usually reef sites are in like 50 to 90 foot of water or so. So these fish will kind of intermingle throughout each other. They're kind of pushing inshore to spawn. It seems that the smaller blackfish will move inshore to spawn in the backwaters in the spring. The really trophy blackfish spawn where they live. When you're talking about a blackfish that's 15, 20 pounds and he lives on that wreck, he lives in that wreck. He doesn't move around. Him and his females that live on that wreck often have like a bull and harem type of association where they'll just come up and they'll roll on the surface 30 miles offshore and they'll spawn right there. The magic of how these babies happen, how they come into the backwater and spawn in the estuaries, I have no idea. But I do know that they do want to push inshore to spawn when they're smaller. When they're bigger, not so much. But we're spending most of our time on the reef sites. Rubble piles are good to fish, but the fish are really transient on concrete rubble. The fish that live in the wreck are usually a little more home bodies. Usually you will get bigger fish from the wrecks.
Frank, we've had great luck. And that's, who told me this? Was it you, Carberry, or Bill Figley? Somewhere down the line. And maybe it was Pete. Peter Clark, the head of the Reef Project now, Marine Fisheries. Toglove tanks, the Toglove metal. I've never gone fishing around metal in April. I'll be right open with that. Had great luck with them November, December around metal. Do you find metal an attractant in April? I mean, can you pick some Toglove there? The tanks especially on some of these reefs and the armored carriers, they're loaded.
It's really important when you realize what a tank is. When the reef site began dropping tanks, they used to drop them on a sand bottom and they used to sink after a few years. What they do now is they bring a hopper barge out there.
Right.
They drop a hopper full of concrete rubble. Then they put the tank on top of the concrete rubble so it doesn't sink. So you not only have the tank, but you also have the apron around the tank. So these fish literally live inside the tank, inside the structure, and then they swim around it very often. So, we've caught some jumbo fish on tanks for sure.
Frank, your rigs, have you, you mentioned you put a slider hook on there. Snafu rig effective this time of year?
Snafu rig's excellent choice. I really like that if I'm fishing a whole crab. And usually I'll put a medium-sized white legger on there. I'll trim the legs off of it and put one hook in the left, one hook on the right. I usually drop it on the floor and step on it a couple times because the captain always likes that.
Uh-huh.
and then I'll flip it out and I'll just let it sit. You know, a lot of times during the day, everybody on the boat's busy. Everybody's catching fish. Like I said, I'm always looking for that big fish. So I'm usually fishing this way, and I would much rather get one really good bite during the course of the day than catching little fish all day long. That's just not how I roll. I'm looking for the big one.
Frank, your jig weights and jig shapes, I've seen tog jigs, not a little variation in shape, but your weights, and like you said, avoid the glow colors. You go with the standard base, say black or just plain lead?
Mm-hmm. Something that's not shiny. If it is lead, make sure you dunk it in a bucket of salt water for a couple days and let the lead get nice and dull so it's not shiny, so it doesn't attract the dogfish. I really like Dante's Magic Tail jigs. They have really good hooks on them. I like the shape of that jig the best. I have 3/4 up to 2 ounce. I never go over 2 ounce. If I start getting over 1.5 ounces, I'm really thinking it's time to switch to a rig. But if I can fish a 2 ounce and it's not walking on the bottom, I'm good with that. I don't go over 2 ounce.
And you're using 20-pound braid, correct?
20-pound braid on my spinning rod and a 50-pound fluoro leader.
Okay, now, Frank, one question that I have on these bigger togs, because we're going up against a break pretty soon, Frank. The conservation aspect of keeping these bigger fish, if it's legal, you can keep it. What's your take on that? I mean, you get a 10, 12, 15-pound tog. Mary, mother of God, that thing has to be 100 years old.
Actually not, Tom. They actually grow at a growth rate of about 1 year per inch.
Oh, not bad.
Okay. Or I'm sorry, 1 year per pound. So like the 26-pounder that Sully caught on Tom Daffin's boat a couple years ago, we actually had the Olivus analyzed, and came back at 26 years old. That's close enough for me. But you're right, they do grow slow. But these people that say like they're dinosaurs or this or that, that you know what, they flat out don't know what they're talking about. But it's
count me in on that, people. Go ahead.
sounds like a good story, but it's just not true. But the moral of the story is if I do hook a fish, I do want to get them away from the structure, but then I want to slow down. I want to slow down so I don't bring this fish up to the surface so quickly that the fish get the bends. I want to try to prevent their eyeballs from popping out of their head. Mm-hmm. I want to try to prevent their intestines from shooting out of their butthole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit of air bladder is one thing, but when their intestines are hanging out 6 inches, that's a whole different story.
Right.
But even so, I mean, we've caught these fish where they seemed pretty healthy and they were just a little bit off. And we've actually had them where we put them in a tall bucket of water, like facing head down on the deck of the boat. And after like 5 minutes or so, all of a sudden their tail starts going, and man, they're ready to go in, and you release them and they're good as can be. But I really do like to release these fish on my charters personally. In the springtime, we keep 2 fish per man.
Okay, fair enough.
We only keep the males, and we let all the big ones go that we can. And we really do try to play them out, play them a little bit slow, play them a little gentle so that they don't kill themselves on the way up.
Okay, well, Frank, I've got to wrap it up pretty soon. I want to talk Century here. I mean, high-end rod company, great products here. Is there a series or a TOG-specific rod in the spinning and the casting configurations?
As far as rig fishing goes, I designed the Century Pro Togger about 5 years ago. It's an awesome rod. It feels very lightweight, but it's more than capable of handling any record fish out there. As far as fishing a jig goes, I like the Weapon Mag Taper in the 7'10". It also comes 7'3". Very light rod, but exceptionally strong and exceptionally powerful. You know, Tom, something with Century too, you could call up, you could get a rod built, or you can get an assembled factory rod, or you can get just a blank. If you're a very experienced black fisherman, if you like your rod a certain way, call up and get a Century Pro Togger blank and get it built the way you want. If you're kind of new to the TOG game, if you don't really know what it takes to make an excellent blackfish rig rod, you want to call Ryan White at Hatter and Jacks. You want to ask him for Frank Mihalik's Pro Togger. That is the Century factory built blackfish rod. It's perfect for fishing 8, 10, 12 ounces all day with a whole crab. You're not going to feel undergunned. And if you do get a fish that's going to be a new record, that rod is easily going to handle it.
There you go. Frank Mihalik, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin. By the way, Frank, your schedule now, TOG, and then before you know it, boom, it's Fluke, and then before you know it, bass mixed in. You're going to have a pretty busy spring, young man.
Yeah, I am a lucky guy, that's for sure.
Listeners, the tackle user, tackle abuser, Frank Mihalik, outdoor writer extraordinaire. Frank, thanks for joining us. You have a great season. Hey, best to the family, bud.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Hope to see you on the water, buddy. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's a great guy. What a writer, too. I meant to ask him, Frank, when's the book coming out? When is the book? Should I call him? No. I'll tell you, if anyone should be writing a book, it is Mihalik. Okay, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull, second round. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
When you need to know, it's WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
News. I'm Carmen Roberts. A powerful tornado struck Mississippi last night, leaving death and destruction in this 100-mile-long path. Fox weather meteorologist Brett Adair was there.
We had the drone up in the air and saw this massive tornado coming in probably 5 or 6 miles away, and then just watched numerous explosions as it came across the highway here in Silver City.
The twister killed at least 10 people, trapped others in the rubble, and caused widespread power outages. The town of Rolling Fork, among the hardest hit. Rescue crews in Pennsylvania are searching for 9 people missing after a chocolate factory exploded.
There's not too much to be able to kind of salvage from it. The building in the front with the church and the apartments, the explosion was so big that it moved that building 4 feet forward.
West Reading Mayor Samantha Cog, at least 2 people killed, 8 injured. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. Cloudy skies overnight with a little rain, the overnight low 43. Periods of rain Saturday. We'll see a breezy morning with a high of 59. Couple of showers and a thunderstorm Saturday evening. Otherwise, mostly cloudy and mild, the low 49. Sunday will be sunny and windy, a nice end of the weekend. Sunday's high 67. I'm AccuWeather's Drew Shannon on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, get your TOG on with Frank Mihalik. April Togging is going to start next Saturday. Again, a little bit of Happy New Year, but I'll give that shout out next Saturday. All the talk about the offshore wind farms. Now, Congressman Jeff Van Drew, cool guy. I've known Jefferson for years and years and years. Had some down at the Wildwood Convention Center, standing room only with 400 people or another couple of hundred outside, evidently. And Orsted, the reps are to be doing this pillage and plundering, as I'm saying it. Yeah, I said it. Off the jersey shirt. I didn't even send a rep. Now, Justin Follaby said, to me, being the cynic that I am, to me, and I appreciate the efforts being made to stop this. Stop this. Please stop this. For my dark little corner of the universe. Remember this, remember that long, that's that line from that Kiss song, Heller Hallelujah. Money makes the rules. Too much money involved here. Whales and dolphins and porpoises, besides that, if they can ever find what's causing it. I don't know. Here to shed some light on this is a good friend of Rack and Fin Radio for years, Mr. John Toth. He's the president of Saltwater Anglers of Bergen County, been doing that for 14 or 15 years. He's also a trustee for the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. That's another 12 or 15-year gig. John has wrote an excellent paper on the offshore windmill projects, the pros and cons. There are no pros. Okay, Tom P., you're going to be able to fish around them. Who said that? Is that written? And even if it is written, can always get around it. You know me, I'm the cynic. Mr. Toth, thanks for bearing with my little tirade right there. How you doing, John?
Okay.
Before we get going, how's that lovely family of yours? Everything kicking ass?
We are. We're good.
We're good. That's what I want. Hey, man, the tog season opens April 1st. Look out. Look out, Toth. And the stripers are already right, right? Toth, look out. We're going to get you on a boat, man. So, John, to the offshore wind project, excellent paper, noise and vibratory effects, ocean floor habitat, ecosystem. I mean, just covered the bases. We don't have much time, John, maybe another 10, 12 minutes or so. Your take or untake on this this boondoggle project. And I say another thing. Electric cars, be powered by solar and windmills only. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Toth, but I digress. Go ahead, John. The floor is yours, brother.
Okay, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Always.
I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
I've been to so many meetings about windmills, Stockton University, Rutgers University, Zoom meetings, webinars from NOAA, Bureau of Energy Management, BOEM, and New Jersey DEP. There's so many issues involved in this, so many unanswered questions, the cables and whatnot. And we're being told that, and the reason why we're being pushing these windmills is because of climate change. And if we don't do something about climate change, the world's going to come to an end.
We're all going to die! Sorry.
Anyway, it's going to come to an end. And that is the justification for this. And that's why it's being pushed also by political reasons, too. But I have never really seen, I mean, I've seen a lot of papers, a lot of information, but I've never really seen something like, if we put up the 650 windmills off New Jersey shore, what are we going to gain? What is the end product about reducing the emissions, the bad emissions? There's no numbers. So we're pushing this with some kind of dubious result that hopefully will reduce this these bad emissions and climate change will be reduced and go away. Well, so we're moving ahead on this with a lot of costs, possibly screwing up the oceans, the fish migrations, and
right.
And also what we're experiencing now with the dead whales, dolphins, and washing up on our beaches. We just had eight of them wash up on Sea Island City.
Right down the highway, right down the parkway here. Yeah.
And Cape May, right. And coincidentally, I just got an email from Jim Lovegren this morning, and Jim Lovegren is a commercial fisherman. He went off fishing with his crew, and he saw a dead whale, not a whale, thrashing around in the water, obviously in some kind of distress. And not far from it is one of those survey vessels.
Mm.
And that's a video that he took. So there's, you know, connected dots here. But in regard to noise, and the there's always been an issue with whales. I mean, the when the windmills are going to be constructed, any kind of whales moving around that area, they have to stop construction. So this is one thing they really I've seen that says that the noise really affects the whales and dolphins, and we say sea animals. And while we're having this, these research vessels going around doing the mapping with sonar, wait when the windmills are constructed, they're going to be 850 feet high. Now, anchoring them, you think about anchoring them on the ocean floor, what kind of noise that's going to produce?
Sure, and John, won't they also be pumping out heat? I mean, warming the waters around them? I don't know.
Yeah, there's supposed to be some curtain around them or whatever, but it's you can't when you start putting some kind of structure like that, 850 feet, you have to have noise. Mm-hmm. It has to affect the environment. And when they are up, think of it, you have this blaze moving around, you have a swishing sound that goes on and on and on. And also, think about the blades, how big they are, and now as they're connected to the structure that goes to the ocean floor. Well, it has to have vibration effects.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they're going to be gigantic tuning forks. Tuning forks. That has to mm-hmm. affect. Now, the sea animals,
then the cables to me are another nightmare.
That's another thing too. That's a whole other issue. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, what we're getting here is that we're not getting the answers. I mean, we bring up, you know, when we have these webinars and seminars and things, is we want stakeholder input. Stakeholder input. Well, guess what? They don't listen to us. And the same issues pop up over and over and over again. And we're kind of looking at it, you know. We're looking at it, but we don't get the definitive answers. So it keeps going on and on.
Yeah, it just seems that it screams we're hiding facts from you. Or we don't even know the facts yet, but we're hiding information from you. You don't need to know that, people. That's the attitude I seem to be getting from the hubris is shocking.
Well, I think the heart of the problem is this, really simply. They're moving ahead on this for political reasons, this climate change justification. The heart of the problem, as I see it, is they're really not doing the environmental impact that they really need to see what is happening here. From what I see, they want to put them up and then see what happens next. Because they don't know.
Exactly.
They don't know what's going on. I mean, you ask, if you put one of these windows, if you put one of these windmills up, or two or three of them, and then you had time to study the effects. So you have a positive, concrete stuff you could look at. And you have cables going out to 15 miles, 20 miles. You could rip up the ocean floor like crazy to do this. But what are the effects? About the cables going out, that could affect the whole fish migration. So if this goes through, what we're talking about, our whole fishing industry could be totally changed.
Recreational and commercial. Now, I understand, John, that are they increasing the distance in between these structures? And is the distance going to be enough for the commercial guys if they can get in there?
Initially, it was 0.7 miles. 0.75 miles is the distance between them. Now they're talking about 1 mile. But even that, I talked to one of the developers who wanted to remain anonymous, and she said, and she has a background with commercial fishing. She said that is not enough. That's not enough distance. And with the dragging going through, and what if we have, say, a storm picks up? And we have to all get out. And that thing's, you know, they happen. So that's 5 o'clock, we got to get out. NOAA says, there's an emergency. All of those vehicles going out there, you can imagine the problems with safety.
And John, again, another thing too, from the recreational fishing end, you get no answer. And there are a couple of rec guides or whatever you want to call them, or charter captains, supposedly going to love these things. And right. But again, the fact of the matter is they won't say definitively how close, if even at all, you can get in close to these structures to fish.
Yeah,
so there's access gone. Besides the commercial, it's gone.
What they're saying is we hear over and over again that you'll be able to fish there. You'll be able to fish there. Well, during the construction, we won't. But there's substations. You have the windmills and you have the substations connecting the power to land. Well, think of it. You don't have to be too smart about this. If you have a terrorist and you want to really shut down the whole industry there, just hit the substation. Now, if any kind of terrorist activity, they'll shut this down for a long time. I don't see this popping up. It's too spread out. And so we can't fish here because it's a terrorist target.
Yeah. And another thing, too. One, the expense, the increase in the price, the electric prices that the people are going to have to pay, we consumers are going to have to pay. Is it true that this power here off LBI or farther is going to be going to New York?
Yes.
Not even Jersey?
No, it's tough. The one off LBI might be going to New Jersey. I'm a little bit confused about that, but the rest of the stuff is going to New York. New York.
And there we go.
But, you know, on the question of cost to the average consumer, I have asked that at a number of meetings over and over again. And I said, well, that is a separate issue. That is a totally separate issue then, apart from what we're talking about. They do not want to bring it up. And there's not too long ago in the Asbury Park Press, there was some group that was pushing Murphy, saying, look, in this big master plan you're talking about, what will be the cost to the average consumer for these windmills? Because they need subsidies. They need subsidies.
Right, exactly right.
And not only that, though, you have the commercial industry there, where they're going to put the windmills on their prime fishing grounds, and the commercial industry is going to lose a good bit of their business. Yeah. Well, the commercial industry is saying, look, if you're going to shut us down or we're going to lose some business, we want to be subsidized. We want to be compensated. Well, who do you think is going to pay for that?
And there you all go. Right? And there
it
you go.
It all comes back to us. I do believe, I think if the public really knew all the ins and outs of what we're talking about here in depth, I mean, they would not support this. I don't.
Good guy. Good guy. Great paper. Check it out. Hey, hopefully we had a couple of minutes for some quick fish reports. Be right back. Rockin' Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station.
This is House Call for Health. Women who follow the Mediterranean style way of eating may be extending their life. Researchers looked at data from 16 studies involving more than 700,000 women over the age of 18. Their heart health was monitored for 12 and a half years, and they found those who closely followed the Mediterranean diet lowered the risk of cardiovascular disease by 25% and the risk of death by any cause by 23%. Study authors note it's unclear why the diet is specifically beneficial to women, and they urge further gender-specific research before any clinical recommendations could be made. The findings appear in the journal Heart. In a separate study, a Mediterranean diet could help lower the risk of getting Alzheimer's. Rush University Medical Center in Chicago did that study, which was published in the journal Neurology. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady. Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Like I promised, some quick fish reports. Kicking it off is Mike Cunningham, Seattle Bait and Tackle, 4120 Park Road, a.k.a. Fish Alley in Seattle. Mikey, how you doing, man?
Everything's going great.
How's the bite on in the back? What's happening?
Yeah, we're seeing the striper bite here around the island really start to pick up. It's mostly been a night bite. Guys are fishing the lights of docks, bridges, things like that, and doing well, mostly soft plastics. My daytime guys, fishing worms, fishing clams, still pretty slow. I think we need a couple more degrees of water to get those stripers going. Haven't seen a weak fish yet, but we're not far off.
Oh, I was just going to ask you.
It has my first commercial crabbers head out. So we will have a crabbing report in the next couple of days, too.
All right.
We'll see if any of those are crawling around.
Mike, are you hearing any size to the bass in the back?
Yeah, local here around the island, you know, I've seen fish up to maybe like 33 inches. Most of them are in that, you know, 24 to 28 range.
Okay, Mike, now also next Saturday, April 1st, the tog season opens for the month. You're going to have green crabs and all that good stuff down there?
If the bait guy has green crabs, I will have green crabs. We're kind of, you know, beholden to them, but my order's already placed, so we're doing everything. Ken.
Okay, man, let me ask you this, because shout out to Captain Al Cardelli and a Bay Hound years ago. Turned me on to a small but intense winter flounder bite down your way in the back. Are you hearing anything about that?
you know, we had those couple of winters where it was real good. We had a couple guys out there fishing for them, and it dropped off. And then the past couple of, you know, springs, let's say, I haven't had anybody go try. I don't know anyone who's come through here and tried, but we had a couple of good years, a couple of bad years, and now we need people to go out and give it a shot again. So that is an unknown at this time.
They are there. Hey, Mike, you take care, man. Best of the family.
Have a great day.
Let's jump it up to, I think that's Burlington County there. Allen's Dock, 5698 Route 9 in New Gretna, right under the Garden State Parkway, southbound on the Bass River, across from the Viking Marina. And let me tell you, the perch, we know down there is insane. But I understand there is a striper bite going on. Joining us is Justin J. Man, what's happening with the Line Siders?
How we doing, Tommy P?
Oh! Bass.
Yeah, actually, I just had a guy send me a really nice looking fish right a little bit further upstream. We got to look for right now where the fish are spawning, and worms are the ticket. If you can get your hands on some blood worms, that seems to be the best bait you can get.
Justin, you hear anything on the open Barnegat Bay? They've been whacking some in the back there along the sedge banks with the grub tails and the paddle tails. Any plastics bite down your way?
You know, we do have some plastics biting. A couple guys were out there swimming a little bit of, the kill shots by Magic Tail.
Magic Tail.
Yep, and then, you know, they could pair them with some soft plastics. We've got some new plastics in this year from a company called Bite Me Lures, and they work really well. And, these guys are catching them sometimes right off the docks, which is neat.
Justin, what about the white perch? The spiny still active?
Oh, yeah. It's funny. When you have the perch bite real good, sometimes the striper bite isn't so good. We've had a decent perch bite up until maybe this week. And now I haven't seen as much perch around, but people are really getting stripers all up and down the rivers.
Now, Justin, you know my proclivities, but that water temperature jumps a few more degrees. Listen, is that Bass River area there? That's a whopper stomper catfish bite. You start to get some people interested in the kitties?
You know, I had two catfish caught last week.
Wow, already?
They were sort of incendiary. These guys were going out striper fishing. And you know how the catfish are. They'll take any of your bait, whatever you want to give them.
They're like me. I eat anything, as you can see. Okay. Justin, shoot your hours, man. What's the dealio down there?
Hey, right now, while the season's just getting kicked off, we're Thursday through Monday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. So after work, stop by. We're there. And then come April 15th, we go 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. So if you're an early riser or you get out of work, you got some place to come and get some bait and do your thing.
Okay, Jay, you take care. Before I let you go, how is Big GK?
Oh, you can't slow him down. You can only hope to contain him.
I saw him at the boat show, man. He's like a whirling dervish. I said, hey, Coach, slow down. You're gonna blow by the boots and make them fall.
Tell you what, you guys have felt all the wind lately. That's just my old man running around town, man.
Take care, Jess. We'll see you next week.
See you, Tom.
Let's keep the Route 9 connection going up there. Empire Fishing and Tackle, Route 9 in Tuckerton, right next to Pacon Lake. Now, listeners, remember, Pacon Lake is stocked with trout. It is closed to bass fishing, any kind of fishery, right now until 8 a.m. on April 8th. Yeah, I know there's some monster bass in there, monster bluegills, monster pickerel, but no. But there is some saltwater activity happening in the area. Join us online is Crystal Pinkett at Empire. Mr. T, what's happening, brother?
Hey, how you doing today? I hope all is well. We are getting some good reports. We're getting a little bit off the surf up in LBI. Bloodworms are the answer. You're fishing with bloodworms. You're looking for perch. Chances are you're going to end up getting a striper.
Wow.
Traveling Point has been pretty hot recently. That's been working out nicely. Again, bloodworms are the go-to bait at this point.
Chris, getting bloods, I mean, do you have them?
Oh, we have them in stock. We got dozens and dozens of them.
Chris, you hearing anything farther back up in the tidal rivers, like the Mullica, on the stripers?
On the Mullica, there were a couple of shorts that have been getting caught. They're getting them on a couple of the points out of there and the drop-offs. Being that the temperature dropped over the last, couple of weeks from give or take 44 to about 39,
yeah.
As soon as that water kicks back up again, it's going to be on fire.
Now, Chris, we have about another 30 seconds remaining in your little slot here. I understand opening day of trout season, April 8th. You have something going on for the young anglers. What do you got? Go!
Yes, we do. We're having our first trout fishing extravaganza for all the kids up to 14 years old. It's all free registration. We've got a bunch of giveaways. We've got bait that we're going to be giving the kids. There's going to be another announcement as soon as we move closer. One of our supporters are going to be putting a couple of nice fish in the water for us, but we're going to wait on that until a day or two before. A bunch of the clubs in the neighborhood are coming down and helping us out.
Great.
They're all volunteering. Should be a wonderful day. Great community day for the kids.
Okay, Chris, what are your hours this weekend? Go!
Our hours this weekend are going to be from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening, Friday and Saturday. We will be open from 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Sunday. And as we do move forward, we'll be adding more hours until we're up to 7 days a week come May.
Okay, Chris, see you guys next week. Take care, man.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
And let's wrap it up with Justin Nanara Fanatics, West Avenue, 1325 West Avenue in Ocean City, New Jersey's greatest family resort. Big J, what do you say?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? There's still a lot of action. Back bays are starting to get loaded with bass. They're pushing out hard. They're moving towards the bridges. Daytime, they're around, Parkway area and the channels, bloods, clams, soft plastics toward the banks, small plugs. Nighttime around the bridges, it's plastics and plugs, which is kind of surprising for this time of year.
Yeah, wow.
And then, up the rivers, same thing. There's bass all over, and I'm hearing them all the way up to Mace Landing.
Yep.
Big bass, too. Like, I've heard at least three reports of a 50-plus-inch bass.
Wow. Hot bait up there. I mean, you can't use herring, but what are the guys using? I mean, there's guys, even that cold weather we had earlier, and some of the rain, there's guys fishing at that bulkhead right there in Gaskill Park in Mays Landing.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, it's still bloods all the way. I've always found the clams work great for big bass.
Mm-hmm.
But your constant action is going to be bloods. Take shrimp for the perch as well.
You have both in stock? And you have grassies in stock?
No grassies.
Oh.
Just bloods. We're carrying jumbos. We'll have clams in tomorrow. We sold out.
So something with the grass shrimp, Jess. You look, they're like peanut monkey. You look at them the wrong way and they die.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep them out of order. You store them in a fridge on a saltwater paper towel or saltwater, like regular towel, and they'll stay for days.
Okay, Justin, are you hearing anything about some early weekies?
I have not heard anything. And I've tried to reach out to a couple friends of mine that would be catching, and there's absolutely nothing.
Okay. Okay, you take care, man. We'll see you guys next week.
All right, Tom.
See you, brother. Yeah, fish are around. That will do this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders. God bless law enforcement. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio. Shout out to UBNJ's John Erndl. Gone through a very grueling, what a bad scene. He's back. Back in action physically. Okay, in recovery. Big J, you're going to do it all right. Prayers to you from Rack and Fin Radio. See you next week. Tom P., Rack and Fin Radio.